I'm Lino Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. Last week, a young mother from Mali attracted worldwide attention as she gave birth to nonuplets, 25-year-old Halima Cisse, who was expected to give birth to 7 children, had 9 babies against all expectations. According to reports, the mother did not use fertility treatments, which can cause multiple birth pregnancies. For more on the subject, I spoke with Dr. Edward Sang, a gynecologic oncologist at Kenyatta National Hospital in Nairobi, Kenya. Dr. Edward Sang, thank you so much for joining us today.
Most welcome.
First of all, I would like to start with your reaction. We heard that last week a woman from Mali gave birth to 9 babies. And this is an unusual scenario.
Well, quite surprising, very unusual, especially because the doctor said there was no medication for fertility. Most of the time when we have multiples, especially more than 2, most of the time it's due to fertility treatment because it causes a lady to ovulate more than usual, and then we get the multiple births. So I was quite surprised to hear that this was not the case in this situation.
So most women who get pregnant have 1 baby. Could you explain the phenomenon on how an egg would give multiple baby or an ovulation?
Usually multiple births occur in 2 ways. One of the ways is that a lady ovulating more than 1 egg in a cycle and both of them conceiving. And so we would have like 2 different individuals. Then there's a situation where there's 1 pregnancy forming. Then a few days or hours after conceiving, then that embryo breaks into 2 or more than 2. And then now you have identical twins because they have the same genetic material. So those are the 2 main ways that we get multiple births.
So Dr. Sang, is this something that we see very often among pregnant women? Data from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention shows that twin births have increased more than 40% over the years. Another data reveals that women from Africa and Asia have about 80% of those births. Is this something that we see a lot with women in developing countries?
Well, it's increasing with time because of the increased seeking of fertility treatment and the increased use of medications that make women ovulate more. We are getting more and more multiple births. We're also getting more ladies going in for in vitro fertilization or test tube babies, and that with the placement of more than 1 embryo, then we do get more and more births coming up.
But what's interesting here is the fact that there seems to be not enough access to IVF treatment on the continent. Not everywhere you can find it. So how do we reconcile that with the fact that we see women having twin babies, triplets, and more?
Well, some medications can do that, even without IVF. So there's a medicine like, for example, one called Clomid, which is used quite a lot around the world, which is used a lot in ladies having problems with fertility. And one of the side effects, if you can call it that, is that sometimes instead of getting 1 baby, they get 2 or more.
So when a woman is expecting more than 1 baby, thinking about 3 babies and more, up to 9 babies, that must be a very risky pregnancy, right?
Exactly. And when I was just looking up what has happened in the past, 2 other recorded nonuplets or 9 babies born at 1, none of them survived. So that is a problem because they're usually born too premature to survive.
So what do you do in a case like this to keep the babies healthy? Of course, they have to receive special care. What does it take?
First of all, it's not many centers or hospitals that can manage this. It has to be a hospital with a pediatric or neonatal ICU, so an ICU for a very tiny baby. There are very few of those in Africa. In Kenya, we probably have 5 to 10 centers which can take care of a baby over half a kilo at birth. And so many of them in centers, in many hospitals would not survive, because they don't have the facilities or the staff to take care of those babies.
What about the health of the mother? How do you address that during pregnancy and at birth to ensure that she survives?
Yeah, like in the case of the lady from Mali, she also delivered too early at 30 weeks after they took care of her from 25 weeks to 30 weeks. And that usually is done, the delivery is done by cesarean section. So there is the small risk of cesarean section. There are other complications that can occur with multiple births, like high blood pressure, like excessive bleeding. And so those are things that would come up and may make the pregnancy even more difficult for the client.
So what do you advise in general to women who have multiple pregnancies like that?
Well, usually close monitoring in pregnancy, and also, if at all possible, to avoid it, because we do get many ladies now coming to us as doctors and asking, is there anything you can do to make me have two at once? And we would discourage that and also tell them the consequences of multiple births. First, prematurity is a problem, high blood pressure. And so there's so many complications that we should be aware of. It's not as easy as it looks, as we'd say, yeah.
Are there particular ways they have to eat? Do they need to stay in bed, or it depends on each woman?
It depends on the individual. Twins are more easier to deal with. But once we start going to triplets, quadruplets, then yes, the lady may not be able to work, probably have more rest, closer monitoring, more visits to the doctor, and most likely delivery by cesarean section. And so she has to, especially in Africa, has to plan accordingly so that when the time comes, she's able to have a cesarean section. And not only that, the babies have to have a good chance. And so the staff and the facilities for premature babies should be nearby.
And finally, Dr. Song, what are your thoughts, your final thoughts with regards to this phenomenon of multiple pregnancies, especially on the continent?
Well, I think it's something we are going to see from time to time. There are more and more people training in maternal fetal medicine. There are more and more facilities coming up to deal with smaller babies. And so we probably are going to get better with it in time. And so we're going to encourage ladies who must have multiple births to do so within as close to the best centers as possible.
Dr. Edward Song, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That was Dr. Edward Song, a gynecologic oncologist at Kenyatta National Hospital in Nairobi, Kenya. In much of Africa, including Zimbabwe, women struggling to have children often face a stigma and ridicule. To help overcome the problem, two Zimbabwean doctors in 2017 reopened the country's only in vitro fertilization clinic. Columbus Mavunga has more from Harare.
Since the clinic reopened in 2017, several years after its previous owner retired, IVF Zimbabwe says it has helped about 120 women have babies through in vitro fertilization. Dr. Sidin Farai, who runs the clinic with Dr. Tinoviba Mhlanga, says some couples struggle to have children and turn to the wrong sources for help.
The most obstacle that is there hindering people from seeking assistance is lack of knowledge. Imagine how many people have stayed together for more than 1 year and they're still failing to conceive, but then they don't know where to go and get assistance. Normally people then tend to go to maybe traditional healers, faith healers, which are maybe cheap or easy to get, but without any good outcome from there.
Farai says he and Mhlanga are happy when they help couples reach their goal.
I think the value is really seen in the happiness and joy which we are bringing to subfertile couples in terms of assisting them to conceive and having a baby. The joy is real and it's something which is touching, personally affecting also us as individuals and clinicians. So basically assisting couples to conceive is helping maintaining marriages to continue, the unions to continue, and also bringing livelihood to people's lives.
One of those who have benefited from IVF Zimbabwe is a 30-year-old woman who is expecting to deliver next month. Her first marriage collapsed after 7 years of failing to conceive. As she narrates her ordeal with in-laws and community, she does not want to be identified.
The blame would always come back to us women. Maybe there's something that you did, or maybe there's you didn't go well. To be honest, there was a lot of negativity coming from the backstab.
The United Nations World Health Organization says failure to conceive in Africa is largely blamed on women, although half of all infertility cases can be traced back to men. Dr. Nancy Kidula from the WHO's Regional Office for Africa says infertility problems are common and can be overcome. Via a messaging application, Kidula said in Africa, many governments are more focused on health problems like epidemics, infectious diseases, and malnutrition.
Therefore, infertility will tend to fall quite low on the priority list. Fertility treatment is also very expensive, to the extent that even insurance companies are reluctant to fund fertility management.
Patients at IVF Zimbabwe say they pay around $4,000 for treatment, a huge sum for the average person in Zimbabwe. But to clients ready to welcome their first child after a long wait, the investment is worth it. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
In 1981, the World Health Assembly endorsed what it called the International Code of Marketing of Breast Milk Substitutes to prevent misleading marketing and encouraging breast milk for infants. However, 40 years later, the promise of the code continues to be inadequately realized, both in Africa and beyond. To find out more about the code and what might be done to help enforce it, VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with Manisha Tarane. She is the West African Director for Alive and Thrive, an international NGO dedicated to health and development through maternal nutrition, breastfeeding, and other dietary practices.
Breastfeeding is the ideal food for infants. It's safe. It's clean. It contains all the nutrients that a baby needs to grow and antibodies which help prevent the infant from many childhood illnesses. Formula, on the other hand, even though companies have tried to make it as close to breast milk as possible, is not a sterile product. And it's particularly harmful when mothers use it in a way that's not hygienic, or they're not able to follow the instructions that the formula company puts out in terms of how to prepare the formula for infants.
Selling formula is very lucrative, though. I understand that historically, formula manufacturers have often resorted to highly questionable tactics to gain trust.
Yes. So, for example, in West Africa, they really interact a lot with health workers. They visit health facilities, both public and private. They try and influence health workers to promote formula. They provide lots of supplies and they donate to health workers so that they can hand it out to mothers. And this is really dangerous because, you know, in Africa, often mothers are very young when they have their babies, and the health workers is a resource for them, and it's someone they trust.
I understand that formula is an aspirational item too, a sort of status symbol that some mothers use to make them seem higher class.
That's right. A study that we did in Cote d'Ivoire showed that often formula is promoted also by family members based on social norms, based on the advertising done by formula industry.
Nowadays, of course, formula manufacturers also use social media.
Yes, formula industries have really leveraged social media platforms. They run mother-baby clubs. They run hotlines. They're just so clever in the way they market this to parents.
Governments would have a hard time competing with that.
So one of the things that Alive and Thrive has been working on over the last 12 years is really working with government on creating an enabling environment for breastfeeding. And by that, I mean working with them to strengthen policies, helping them put in place programs in which health workers provide counseling to mothers on breastfeeding. And we've been in very close collaboration with governments to really help the governments to understand what the situation is. In Cote d'Ivoire, for example, in 2019, we conducted the study to look at exposure to breast milk substitutes of mothers in health facilities, as well as through mass media and social media. And it gave the government of Cote d'Ivoire very concrete information that they could act on. So they found that almost two-thirds of health workers that were part of the study had had an interaction with the formula company, and only 8% of health workers really knew about the code. So in Cote d'Ivoire, the Ministry of Health is being very proactive, and now they're introducing a new module to train health workers on the code, which is very, very powerful.
Is the over-marketing of formula a problem throughout Africa, or is it just in West Africa, specifically Cote d'Ivoire?
It is a big problem all through Africa. The reason I mentioned Cote d'Ivoire is because Nestle has a big subsidiary in Cote d'Ivoire, and it's one of the faster growing economies.
It is time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis, your moderator for Issues in the News. Join me and a panel of journalists as we discuss the latest top stories of the week, including U.S. regulators authorized the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine to be used by children as young as 12 years of age, widening the pool of those eligible to get inoculated. Listen to Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Welcome back to Health Chat. We turn now to the coronavirus outbreak. Sudan is facing an acute shortage of medical oxygen as a third wave of coronavirus infections swells in the economically struggling country. David Doyle of Reuters has more.
In Sudan's capital Khartoum, oxygen cylinders are being loaded into the back of a car. They are on their way to a coronavirus patient's home for private use. But most of those seriously ill with COVID-19 are facing an acute shortage of medical oxygen. That's partly due to power cuts that impeded production at the economically struggling country's main plant. Hussein Malassi, a senior manager at the Sudanese liquid gas company, says a lack of cylinders is another problem.
Before the severity of this pandemic, the distribution of cylinders over the hospitals was sufficient. What happened is that the consumption of oxygen increased several times with the pandemic. And the cylinders at hospitals did not increase with the same level.
A government survey found that 38% of oxygen cylinders have been smuggled out of the health system for private use. Some patients bribed hospital staff, others relied on personal relationships. Everyone else has been left in hospitals unable to provide adequate care during a third wave of infections. Montasir Othman, Director of Emergency and Epidemic Control at Sudan's Ministry of Health, said times of peak infections make clear the weak capacity of Sudan's hospitals. He added that the government is working to make more cylinders available. But it's not just oxygen. The country, which has recorded 33,000 cases and 2,600 deaths since the start of the pandemic, has just 300 ventilators. Out of 37 hospitals that can take COVID-19 patients, only 11 are in the capital, which has 70% of cases. Last month, officials said Sudan could meet just 40% of its need for medicines. Social media is awash with desperate pleas for help, as relatives seek oxygen cylinders, beds, and drugs for their loved ones.
Scientists in South Africa say COVID-19 variants first detected in the United Kingdom and India are now circulating in the country and are likely to increase the severity of a third wave of the pandemic. South Africa has been hardest hit on the continent by COVID-19, with 1.6 million confirmed cases and almost 55,000 deaths. Now, as winter sets in, infections are once again surging. Darren Taylor has more.
Medical scientists say the variants first found in the UK and India are unlikely to replace the one detected in South Africa late last year as the dominant strains. But they're still concerned, particularly about the three variants driving infections in India. Progressive Health Forum leader Dr. Aslam Dasu explains that scientists are trying to determine if these mutations increase transmission and virulence.
The upsurge in India indicates that is indeed the case. You would not be able to find that kind of transmission with the original founder virus, shall we put it that way. And with the force of infection, certainly of the kind we're seeing, tragically seeing in India, the emergence of more variants is inevitable.
Preliminary investigations by local scientists indicate that the imported variants, simply put, aren't as bad as South Africa's because they aren't as good at evading the immunity afforded by current vaccines. Nevertheless, say the medical minds, the fact that the mutations from the UK and India are now here can only add to the country's COVID-19 burden. South Africa's immunization drive is yet to begin in earnest, so Dasu urges citizens to maintain protective measures such as social distancing and wearing masks.
Look, we're not going to avoid a third wave. What we can do is determine the scale of that wave through the non-pharmaceutical interventions that we're all very familiar with. There's really nothing else that we have in our armory to protect people. We do know that you can reduce the peak of a wave and the extent of a wave just by utilizing those methods. But the third wave is upon us.
The problem is, according to Health Minister Zweli Mkhize, many South Africans have become complacent. This is putting pressure on the government to once again enforce a strict lockdown and to, for example, ban social gatherings. This wouldn't be necessary, says Dasu, if the state had a better vaccination strategy.
In short, it's woefully inadequate.
The government was forced to delay its immunization program a few months ago. This after it was determined that the AstraZeneca shot, of which it had bought 1 million, wasn't very effective in preventing mild to moderate COVID-19 in people with a variant dominant in South Africa. But, says Dasu, this excuse has only limited validity.
After that, it was clear, because it was very effective against severe illness, hospitalization and death, it should have been administered to as many South Africans as possible. Instead, we sold it off.
Like other countries, South Africa also had to pause its rollout of the Johnson & Johnson jab because of concerns it caused blood clots.
It was an unfortunate decision again. We lost a couple of weeks. That has now resumed. But our total vaccination is under 350,000. And this is of great concern, especially if we are trying to reach millions. We don't have the supply. And security of supply is a huge problem in any vaccination program, given the conditions of this particular virus. So we're in a very difficult situation going into the third wave. It would have been ideal in the past.
Dasu describes U.S. President Joe Biden's recent support of waiving intellectual property rights for COVID-19 vaccines as huge. The doctor believes it could result in a flow of vaccines to less affluent countries that need it most, such as South Africa, and potentially save hundreds of thousands of lives, if not more. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa on Monday warned of vaccine apartheid if wealthier nations hog vaccines while poorer countries go without. Sisipho Nkweyiya of Reuters has the story.
South Africa's president has warned against wealthy nations hogging COVID-19 shots while millions in poor countries die in the queue waiting for them. That, Cyril Ramaphosa said, would be tantamount to, quote, vaccine apartheid. Sub-Saharan Africa has administered the fewest vaccines relative to its population than any other region. 8 doses per 1,000 people compared to 150 per 1,000 globally, according to the World Health Organization. South Africa and India have been pushing for a waiver on some intellectual property rights for vaccines so they can be manufactured domestically.
Excellency President.
U.S. President Joe Biden backed the proposal last week, though it could take months to reach a deal.
South Africa's nationality.
In a newsletter, Ramaphosa called on South Africans to support the waiver, saying vaccines should be a global public good. It is about affirming our commitment to the advancement of equality and human rights, not just in our own country, but around the world, he wrote. Ramaphosa said South Africa was one of only 5 countries on the African continent able to manufacture vaccines, and that there was a need for new capacity to be built.
Last year in March, when the World Health Organization declared COVID-19 a pandemic, it had already proved to be lethal and highly contagious. It was a new virus with many unknowns. Since then, scientists have learned a lot about how it affects vital organs and its long-term effects.
Halima Cisse was due to give birth to 7 babies, according to ultrasounds carried out in Morocco and Mali. But given the rarity of her pregnancy, she was transferred to a clinic in Casablanca for specialized care. A health team made up of 10 doctors assisted by 25 paramedics was mobilized for her delivery.
We were able to avoid a hysterectomy for this lady. Currently, thank goodness, she's healthy and safe. As for premature infants, there are 9, 5 girls and 4 boys. Their condition is stable, on artificial respiration, and they are those who have been put on oxygen.
Medical complications are common in multiple births of this type, but Dr. Yusuf Alawi said Cisse and her children are doing well. He added that this case of full-term birth is exceptional.
This is the first case in Morocco and rare around the world that a person gives birth to 9 children, not just in our clinic. We have witnessed the birth of twins here, but not 9. It is a rare thing in the world.
The verified world record for multiple live births is 8. This is an American, Nadia Suleiman, nicknamed Octomom, who gave birth in 2009 when she was 33 years old.
That was VOA's Justin Mullen, Kenzedian. And that's all for this edition of Health Chat. For the latest news and coverage on the coronavirus pandemic, visit voanews.com. Check us out at facebook.com/VOA Health Chat. And let's keep the conversation going. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lino Khumudu in Washington, with producer Dan Brown. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and wash your hands more frequently, and strive to make every day a healthy day. A message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we can all help fight the corona pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and nose when we are in crowded places or areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC, and remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, this is James Barton, managing editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features, and sports. can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC, right here.